Now for our Bible study today, we're going to read some verses from Philippians chapter 4. In our last study, we had reached verse 9 of this chapter. Today we shall examine the little section beginning at verse 10 and going through verse 13. Let me read them to you. Philippians chapter 4, verse 10. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly, that now at the last your care of me hath flourished again, wherein ye were also careful, but ye lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. And may the Lord be pleased to bless to us the reading of these verses. It appears that the overall lesson in this section might be summarized as a gracious acknowledgement for the divine provision through the channel of concerned Christians who were partners with Paul in the spread of the gospel. Now, it would seem that the first thing we've got to learn here is the thought of Christian courtesy. It is Peter, in writing his epistle, who tells us in chapter 3, among other things, he tells us to be courteous. Perhaps that's an exhortation that would be much to the point at the present time. It is enjoined upon all Christians that in their conversation and dealings with each other and with all men in general, that they display and manifest the spirit of good manners. It's a wonderful thing when you find children, young children, who display good manners. You know, we're living in a day when about the two words that you see always before you are push and pull. Even when you're entering into some store, if they do not have these modern doors that open when you approach them, you will see on the door push or else pull, according to the direction in which the door is to be opened. And it seems to me that these two words have got a lodgment in the hearts and minds of men and women. We're living in an age when it's either push or pull, and people are pushing and pulling all the time to achieve their own ends. But then, when you have everybody pushing and pulling, there is a lack of good manners. A lack of courtesy. Now, there should be good manners manifested by all Christians, and we should all be characterized by what we would like to term Christian courtesy. Peter says, be courteous. Paul seems to emphasize that thought here in this little section. I suggest to you it is a duty. In order to be courteous and display good manners, we ought to be ready to express our gratitude and thanksgiving for favors bestowed. We should recognize whatever little favors are bestowed upon us. It's easy to recognize them and express a thank you, either in words or in writing. But in so doing, there arises a difficulty. How does one express sincere thanks without creating the wrong impression? How can we keep the balance and refrain from exaggeration on the one hand and indifference on the other hand? Let me explain that a little. Perhaps there have been times when a great favor has been shown to certain people, maybe by one friend or by a number of friends who have pooled the resources and supplied a great need to someone. Yet they accept it just as a matter of course, as if they had a right to get it, as if they should get it, and so they just take it and that's it. And they're quite indifferent as to saying a word of thanks to those who have bestowed the favor upon them. On the other hand, there have been times when someone has done a favor or shown a favor, and it may be quite a small favor, but nevertheless, it was something done out of a good heart and a friendly mind. Yet, the person who received it, in expressing their thanks for it, perhaps have exaggerated, and they've made it to seem as if it was a tremendous thing that was done, while the person who bestowed the favor knew perfectly well that it was just a very small favor, the sharing of something with them. So we've got to be very careful that we just keep the balance here. It's right to be courteous. It's always in order to acknowledge some kindness that has been shown to us, but let us acknowledge it with some kind of balance. Let us keep that balance in such a way that we don't exaggerate what was done, and on the other hand, that we don't show this spirit of indifference that it doesn't matter, for it does. Now that brings us then, with these introductory remarks, to verse 10. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly, that now at the last your care of me hath flourished again, wherein you were also careful, but ye lacked opportunity. Here then we learn something regarding Christian concern. These Christians in Philippi had manifested their concern for Paul at different times while Paul was passing through different circumstances. Paul's introduction to the people at Philippi was the time when he went there, as recorded in Acts 16. He didn't know anybody when he first went into the city, but he became acquainted with a group of women who were holding prayer meetings down by the riverside. It was there in that city of Philippi where Paul began preaching the gospel. As it were, it was his introduction to the conditions that prevailed in Europe, in that part of Upper Greece. So therefore Paul went there as a preacher. And these people knew him as a preacher, and they showed a concern for him as a preacher. For when Paul and his companions arrived in Philippi, they were strangers and unknown. But this lady, by the name of Lydia, perhaps she was the first convert in Philippi, every reason to believe she was. And she, being a businesswoman, had a residence there and would have a number of workers with her, and she opened her house and provided hospitality for the preachers. Now that was a concern. This woman was courteous, she was thoughtful, and she saw that these men, if they were going to continue preaching in Philippi, they would require a place to lodge. So she opened her house for the preachers to have hospitality. So they were concerned for Paul and his companions when they were preachers. But there came the day when Paul and I, we've already stressed that in previous studies, because of the persecution that was levelled against them, and those who were the kind of leaders in the city, the rulers, asked him to leave. And for the sake of keeping the peace, he left. When he left Philippi, he had quite a long journey, and about 100 miles to Thessalonica. Then he went on from Thessalonica to Berea. From Berea, he went away down to Athens, from Athens to Corinth, and so on. In plain words, he became, or was, continuing his work as a pioneer. You, it's all right when a man is located in a certain area where he has friends. His friends, no doubt, will be concerned for him. If he's a preacher, they'll make some provision for him. But when a man becomes a pioneer and goes away into strange territory where he is unknown, the question will arise, how is that man to be maintained? I'm sure most of my listeners today are acquainted with the fact that a great number of good men in past years were pioneers. For instance, you think of the man by the name of Carey, who went away to India, the great pioneer of the gospel in India. You think of David Livingstone, who went to Africa. And you think of others, some who went to China and so on. These men were pioneers. They went into what to them was unknown territory to carry the gospel to the natives living in these different countries. Well, how were they maintained? Some of them went in and were away for 15 and 20 years living amongst the natives of the countries where they were pioneering. And communications in these days were very difficult. How were they to be maintained? Well, it's good when people have a concern for them. Today, communication is much easier. You can send help to missionaries in other countries by means of certain missionary societies, or even by mail and so on. But it wasn't so easy in Paul's day. We've already learned from our study of the Philippians that when he was in Rome, there was that man by the name of Epaphroditus, who was chosen out by the Christians at Philippi to take the journey from Philippi to Rome in order to carry to him this special gift, which we'll consider in a moment or two. But then there was other times. Paul says, "But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at the last your care of me hath flourished again, wherein you were also careful, but you lacked opportunity." When Paul went to Thessalonica, these Christians at Philippi continued to think about him and the benefit he had been to them. So while he was pioneering in other cities, they communicated with him. He went to pioneer with the gospel. The Christians at Philippi sent gifts to support him, and this he called fellowship in the gospel. We saw that when we were studying chapter 1, and he thanked them then for their fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now. In plain words, when he was in Thessalonica, they sent gifts to him, not once, but again and again. And so there was times when they communicated with him as a pioneer, and here again they've sent it to him when he was in Rome. But he's no longer pioneering with the gospel. He's been put in prison. Now, it's a good thing to communicate with a man when he's in the area and preaching, but then do you forget about him when he goes out as a pioneer? Or suppose his days of pioneering have come to an end. He's no longer able to do preaching. He's no longer able to do pioneering. He is a man who's a prisoner at Rome. But when Paul became a prisoner and unable to continue his missionary work, the Philippian Christians revived their concern for Paul's needs and sent him a love gift of practical fellowship. I suggest to you, my friend, that was concern. Now, I wonder, in all our expression of Christian courtesy, do we show concern for other Christians? It's all right when we are living, perhaps, in the very lap of luxury, and everything being supplied for us, and we've got all that we need of the material things, but perhaps not so far from us, there may be some people who are in need. Now, I don't think it's necessary for people to make their needs known. There are some people, you know, who would appear to be always in need, and they want everybody to know of their needs. And so they beg and beg, and they appeal here and apply there for their needs to be supplied. That is not the thought I have in mind. That is not the thought that is expressed in this particular passage we're studying today. The fact of the matter is, the Christians at Philippi were intelligent, thinking people. They realized that Paul was in prison. They knew he had been in prison at Philippi when he was there. Now he's in prison in Rome. Now remember, when he was in Philippi, the Philippian jailer got converted. And no doubt the Philippian jailer was one of the members of the church at Philippi. Now, he would know what it was like when a man was a prisoner. He would be able to acquaint the people at Philippi with some of the needs of Paul. And so together, they put their thoughts together, their contributions are put together, and Epaphroditus is sent on to Rome to visit with Paul the prisoner and to help to meet his needs. That, my friend, I think is how it should be done. Somebody is sure to know where there is a need without the person who is in need telling it abroad. And someone who realizes the position they're in makes the need known, and so Christians can have a concern for them and help to alleviate the need. They did that with Paul, and they sent it to him, and it was a love gift of practical fellowship. It may be that somebody's very near to us, not too distant from us, who needs that help. Or it could be it's somebody who has left your place, left your company, left your particular church, and they've gone away to pioneer in some other area. The church must know this, and if they know of somebody who has gone to a missionary field, then surely they can be exercised about helping the work, having fellowship in the gospel, and looking after the person that's doing the work. But what about those whose days are at an end, no longer able to stay on the field where they were doing the work? They're too old now. They've had to go into some of the retirement homes. They've got to be nursed themselves. Well, surely you don't just brush them aside and say, well, now their day's done, we'll forget all about them. Surely we can still show some concern for them in their old age and in their years, you may call it retirement. But now, verses 11 and 12 introduce something else. He says here, not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. You know, contentment is not determined by the possessions we acquire, or the place where we reside, or by the position we occupy. There are some people who have a tremendous amount of possessions, and they may have acquired them honestly. They may have got them by hard work or good business, and they've got quite a lot of possessions. But possessions in themselves don't bring contentment. In fact, a great number of people who have acquired much are still trying to get more, which means that they're not content with what they have. Or it doesn't mean that we're content because of the place where we reside. Some people, you know, live in a very small house of perhaps just a little apartment with very little furnishings. yet they may be content. There's others who have gone on from one house to another until they've got a huge house. The largest house I ever saw was in, it had 100 rooms in it. And you know, when the people who owned it died, no one else wanted to take it over. And so it was given over to the state. Why, who wants 100 rooms? No one needs 100 rooms to live in. And yet, in living in such a large house, I wonder, did they have contentment? I doubt it. You see, we don't get contentment by where we reside, neither the size of the house nor the location of it. And then what about the position we occupy? I suppose the highest position in this land today would be to occupy the White House and to be recognized as the president. But I wonder if living in the White House brings contentment. Or suppose a person may live in a palace. Suppose they lived in the palace of the Royal Sovereign of Britain. I wonder, would they be content? Not only do they have the palace down in London, but they've got the house out in the country, and they've got the big house up in Scotland. Oh, they have many places where they can go. But then, whether it's in a palace or a cottage, it's not the place we reside or the position we occupy. Neither the Prime Minister of Great Britain in 10 Downing Street, or the Queen who lives in Buckingham Palace, or the President of the United States in the White House, the position they occupy, whether Prime Minister, President, or Royal Sovereign, that does not bring contentment. No, contentment is not determined by these things, but rather, it is the inner satisfaction that is found in trusting the Lord Jesus in every circumstance of life. Here was a man who, at the time of writing this letter, he was in the prison at Rome. Yet, he said he had learned that in whatsoever state he was, therewith to be content. He tells us in another place that contentment with godliness is great gain. Contentment is a lesson to be learned in the school of experience, you know. Paul had learned by experience how to abound with plenty, the times when he had more than enough and could share it with others. And also he learned how to be abased with poverty. It is a progressive lesson, and it cannot be learned in a day. It may require a silent and submissive waiting upon God. The Bible teaches that men were to be content with their wages. Also, if we have food and raiment, therewith be content. And remember, be content with such things as you have, for contentment with godliness is great gain. Look at verse 13, Christian conquest. I can do all things through Christ which strengthens me. Practical Christian living does not mean that we succumb to our circumstances and allow ourselves to go under in despair. Neither does it mean that we pretend that difficulties don't exist, and with our heads in the clouds profess we're above the circumstances. But drawing our strength from Christ, we know that our sufficiency is in Him, and we can say we are more than conquerors through Him that loved us. You see then how Paul, writing this little note from the prison at Rome, he speaks concerning his position. He sets before us the great duty of Christian courtesy. He thanks them for their concern for him. He points out to them that he is content, whatever the Lord allows, and whatever may come upon him, he'll be content. And then, of course, he says, there's this great conquest. I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me.